Well, look, there's a lot you can say about Florence, but it's not rural Mississippi.
It's not rural Mississippi. Hello and welcome to Drawing Blood. This is our podcast about histories of art and visual culture, histories of science and medicine, and the macabre. I'm Christy Slobogan.
I'm Emma Merkling.
I'm Gabriele Marcon.
And we're experimenting with a new format today to bring you a little mini-sode in between much-awaited seasons that we are absolutely working on. Christy and I have both just started new jobs, so thank you for bearing with us. And we thought we would try out an interview format, partly to help us cover some of our bases in terms of what's like the job interview way of saying limitations?
I was about to say blind spots, but that's worse.
Yeah. But, you know, as two sort of 19th century, 20th century scholars, we thought that we'd try expand our range a little bit. So today we have with us Gabriele Marcon, who's an early modern historian working on mining in Renaissance Italy, which is super exciting. And he's currently a fellow at ITATI, the Harvard Center for Renaissance Studies here in Florence. And today he's brought in a couple of images for us to all talk about. Thank you for being here.
Yes, thank you. Thank you very much, Emma. I'm super happy to be here and to be speaking with you about mining and women in the early modern period. And thank you, Christy, for organizing it. It's really, really great to be speaking with you today.
And like you said, mining and women, like it's the big reveal.
And as also you said, broaden our scope as if we don't talk about women in every single episode.
We are staying in our lane.
We're staying in our lane in a lot of ways.
So, Gabriele, do you want to introduce the first image to us? Send it to us in the chat.
Yeah, so the first image I choose for today is a pretty striking image. It's actually one of a series of similar paintings that between the 17th and the 18th century depicted the mountain of the Cerro Rico in Potosí, which is like a mining site, a mining extraction site in current day Bolivia. And the striking feature of this image, of this painting, is that it depicts a mountain has the Virgin Mary.
Okay, so this is a really like striking, rich image. And I don't think I've ever seen anything like this before, because as you say, the Virgin Mary is the mountain, but it's like the mountain is this blood red mantle that goes above her halo, over her hands that are kind of protruding in quite a humorous manner, I think, to me. And then there's, you know, other details and curves within this blood red mountain. I think there are like people praying and animals, you know, going up and down her body as the mountain. There are horses. And that's just the center of the image. There's a lot going on around it. But yeah, this Virgin Mary as mountain, as red mountain, is really interesting. And she's being crowned as well.
Well, there's two things that strike me about it. Like, firstly, as I think you mentioned, it's very obviously a religious image. You know, we have these saints at the top and this like dove of peace, and it's got this classic gold back. We have a sun and a moon on either side of her, and at the bottom, a globe and someone who looks like a king. So I imagine that this has something to do with colonialism, I would say, as a guess. But the thing that really strikes me as well, I mean, you mentioned that blood red color, partly obviously because I know Gabriele's specialism, it sort of looks like iron ore to me, you know, which also conjures up blood, I guess, in a different sense. So in this one picture, we're getting earth and mineral ores, we're getting blood, we're getting the volcano, of course, itself, which also I think you mentioned those sort of sprays coming out of our hands. And I hope we'll be talking about gender a little bit, because another thing that's really interesting to me is that lump around her waist, which is almost phallic. Like it's if it were meant to be yonic, it would be
inverted. That's what I was trying. When I was first starting, I was like, and there are other things on the mountain. I couldn't quite figure out how to talk about this additional hill almost in the very center.
So Gabriele, do you want to tell us a little bit about how your project relates to this, or some of the stuff you've been thinking about in relation to this image?
Yeah, why bring in this image?
Yeah, so, I mean, this image relates interestingly with my work because I'm trying to understand under what conditions women were employed or worked in the mines and in what ways normative and cultural ideas influence practices of labor and science in early modern mining. So, for example, one of the questions that I address in my current research is why did women not work in underground mining and how can we think about ways they contribute to mining, so from economic, scientific, and social aspects. So this is a very striking image because it really shows very visually the ways in which early modern people were actually associating the woman or the feminized figure with nature and precisely in this case with the earth and more precisely with a mountain.
Well, even not just women, but in this case, even a holy, like a very pure woman associated with the mountain.
Absolutely, yes.
And it's also interesting because you mentioned this image is from South America, but you are working on Italian mines, right? And I'm curious, what is the extent of the overlap? And I guess, do we find similar imagery in Italy? But also more than that, I'm really curious to hear more about your work on women in the mines.
Yes, thank you, Emma. I mean, there's a lot to unpack in what you just said. And this is extremely important also to separate and to find similarities between the colonial period and the Iberian colonial mines and what happened in Europe. So most of the studies, I'm not a specialist on Iberian colonial mines, but most of the studies that sort of engage with these kind of paintings have specifically argued about the idiosyncratic value of this image. So this is clearly, as Christy was saying, a religious, Catholic religious figure, the Virgin Mary, a pure woman depicted in a colonial space. And many scholars have actually argued that this is a way, this is a striking way in which colonial powers translated specific pre-conquest rites that identify the earth and the mountain in this case with certain religious deities such as Pachamama, for example. This is one of the most important ones. So this was a very important sort of association between fertility, between the earth, between agriculture, between mining and the female figure, which pre-existed actually the colonial conquest.
So this is a way of translating it into a colonial language, something that already existed.
So this is definitely a way to relate a colonial context with an Andean sort of pre-Hispanic, pre-colonial setup. Yes.
And I would say even more than relate, I mean, the colonial violence here is so vivid. I mean, this is like Mount Rushmore in painting. It's like blazoning the religion and the ideology of the colonizer onto what for the indigenous people is clearly a really important sacred site already.
We own this land. We're imprinting our religion onto it.
Yes, absolutely. And there's also a striking element in the image, which is the globe. So the globe shows the importance of Potosí, this enormous, humongous mining extraction site that sort of provided, I think, 80% at points, actually, in the 17th century, 80% of the whole silver circulating in the entire world. So we are talking about an enormous extraction site. And the globe basically relates to the global chain of trade and network and exchange that were made possible somehow by the silver extracted in that specific site. So it's a way also to relate a local mining site with like the global aspect of silver extraction.
And do you sort of see similar imagery in Italy or relating to the mines that you're looking at? It's a very, it's a curious image.
So in Europe, there are actually paintings and images depicting the Virgin Mary as sort of incorporated into a mountain in Spain. So this is not exclusively a colonial practice. It speaks much more to the transatlantic Catholic relationship between, you know, South America, Central and South America, and the Iberian Peninsula, for example. So, for example, in Italy, we don't necessarily find these kind of depictions. It's very hard, but there are absolutely relationships, epistemological, visual relationships between the Virgin Mary or all of other kind of like female saints, for example, and female figures in a Catholic framework, in a Catholic setup, and the mining. I'm thinking about Santa Barbara. So this is like the name in Italian, which is sort of a very important figure for miners. Most of the mines in the Venetian mainland, also in Tuscany, for example, are named after this female figure. So there is a striking relationship between women and mining at various levels, the allegory, for example, and the spiritual and the religious levels. But finding this kind of images is really, really, really difficult in Europe.
Well, it makes sense that we talk about a lot, either in the podcast or in our own work, of like the woman as nature and the man as society, right? And so like we saw it in the first image where it's this kind of extraction from the woman's body, which is the earth, that then allows for the man's world, which is society and trade, to function. So like the woman is needed, and then the woman is the thing that sets off and allows to move the male society, the male economy. And so, I mean, that to me seems like something that was very and continues to be very much the case, like in European spaces.
Yes, absolutely. So what Christy was saying is central to elaborate and analyze the presence of women in the mind. So this idea that nature is associated with a female figure, a female being, it's extremely crucial in the works of so many humanists, so many Renaissance authors, so many ancient compilers, so many alchemists. I mean, it's really everywhere. And it makes sense in the sort of at the time, because this is exactly how not only metals but also plants, for example, living beings were actually thought to be generated through the earth and inside the womb of the earth, basically, because there's like literal references to the womb of the earth has the vessel where these metals, for example, were actually born.
Is the womb of the earth just underground? Like, is anything underground kind of considered the womb of the earth?
Yeah, I mean, there are actually variations, but normally what happened underground is thought to be sort of a gestation process. So metals sometimes were actually called embryos. And the references to the earth and the womb of the earth are actually extremely numerous and present in the works of very, very important alchemists and medical practitioners and natural philosophers such as Paracelsus, for example. So we have actually a lot of information about this association.
And can you tell us a little bit more about, I know you do some history of science stuff around this and you've mentioned alchemy, but for instance, how is metal understood to be in the earth scientifically at this point, if that makes sense as a question? You know, what are miners doing?
Okay, so the relationship between the earth and the miners is a sexual relationship. It's an erotic relationship. So there's a lot to unpack also on this point. So miners created these stereotypical views of women in the mines has figures that could jeopardize, that could endanger the search for metals. Because if nature and the earth are female figures, then you can't bring other women where you're working. And we are kind of unfolding this sort of sexual relationship with the earth. So the earth would become jealous. And the earth has the possibility to hide and show her goods meaning her metals, to miners. So there is, they are actually in a very, very, very intimate relationship, and bringing women into the mines would actually jeopardize this sort of relationship, would be seen by the Earth, by the female Earth, as, you know, another woman brought into the relationship.
That is so interesting. I mean, I know Emma and I are both.
It's so cyborg. Like, it's, I mean, I know that this is not about the 19th century, but it reminds me, like, this is a thread that runs, obviously not in terms of the understanding of, you know, how metal grows in the earth or whatever, but this thread of, like, woman is nature and this, I don't know, yeah, like, yeah. Man pursuing her to her hiding places, which is a quote from Frankenstein, that persists, but...
Oh, yeah. Yeah. And trying to tame her in some way, like extracting the metals as a way to, you know, bring those metals into society and have them be quote unquote useful because they're just like wasting underground otherwise. But so you were connecting to the 19th century. I was connecting to the 18th and thinking about like the earth as womb and thinking about midwifery just in general. Like if we're thinking about the earth as womb and mining is taking something out of the womb, then why wouldn't it be women who would be trusted with that? Because in this period, you know, childbirth would have been the woman's realm, right? Not until the 18th century do we start to get men taking things out of women's wombs in the more corporeal sense, right? So like, have you thought about that at all yet? And how like, there's kind of like this slippage of metaphors here, which is always the case of like, the slippage of metaphors that allows some things to be permissible and some things not to be.
This is so interesting. I mean, really. So I think we have to talk about blood in this case. So to answer...
We love blood.
So you're right. I mean, why wouldn't you have women doing this kind of job and doing and going underground and, you know, creating this kind of intimate relationship with the earth? Well, from the medical point of view, women were thought to be corrupting figures when brought close or next to certain living beings, particularly metals or plants and so on. So there is a big discussion in the early modern period between those who thought that, you know, women's blood and menstrual blood is very, very important for, you know, generation because it's nurturing the fetus during the gestation period. And on the other side, other medical practitioners and alchemists, for example, were thinking about, well, but if you are expelling the blood and the menstrual blood in this case, this is something that your body doesn't need anymore. And so this is why you don't need it. And so this is poisonous. This is very corrupting. So you shouldn't actually have it inside your body. And there are also female alchemists, for example, in early modern Germany, who are thinking about ways to harness menstrual blood in order not to bear these sort of corrupting functions, but to have a pure reproductive meanings in order to produce elixirs and sort of artificial blood where you have basically the possibilities to, you know, produce humans without the corrupting aspects of women's menstrual blood, for example.
I mean, that's so interesting because it gives a whole new take on everything we think about regarding the philosopher's stone or the elixir of life. I mean, yeah. Of course, menstrual blood is the elixir of life, you know?
It's too gross, Emma. Dude, I love this, like, it's gross, but also maybe powerful, like, yeah.
But I love that in a period when they're like putting leeches on people to bleed them, they're like, ew, menstrual blood is so gross.
Yes.
I have a more specific question about your project, Gabriele, which is if women are being kept from these mines, you know, how are you, what are you studying? How are you studying women in mining? What is the link there?
So I think women always worked in the mines, period. That's a sort of an important point to make because one of the things that we has contemporary people living in a contemporary world, one of the things that we actually struggle with when thinking about women and mining is that this is physical labor, right? So this is extremely heavy labor and there are these sexual differences and biological differences. But these are actually extremely constructed ideologies and this like a huge actually historiography talking about this like construction of gender and so on. So my question is, okay, but if I don't find women in the mines in my archival records, for example, why aren't they there? So women always work in the mines, and they work actually as part of the family most of the time. So this is an important point to make. Throughout history, this is true almost everywhere. The second point is, okay, what type of work did they do? So what is the actual employment? What is the actual contribution of women? And that's the problem, because if you have normative ideas and formal ideas saying that women shouldn't enter the mines because all the things that we talked about, like blood, like this erotic relationship between miners and the earth, then how do we actually reconstruct their lives, and particularly in this case, their working lives? And I think that one of the ways in which we should actually think about this sort of like broader topic of women and mining is basically think about work above the ground. So like doing some sort of surface activities such as cleaning the ores, washing, administrating financial aspects of this mining community. And you have actually a couple of references, particularly in the archives, in sort of like administrative records. In Germany, for example, there are a couple of records saying that, for example, there were lists of women called old sisters in mining brotherhoods in early modern mines in Germany, for example. And also in Central and South America, particularly in the Iberian colonies, you would also have like a lot of women working on the surface. They were traders. They were actually refining silver and so on. So there is actually a way to recover their contribution.
But they weren't going down in.
That's the thing. So they weren't going down in.
And I just want to ask, is one of the, and maybe I'm just making things up here, but is one of the reasons they needed to be called old sisters is so that like jealousy or like that competition with the earth woman perhaps wouldn't be as pronounced, like, you know, old as in the crone, as in not sexually viable. So maybe like if they're called old sisters, then perhaps that tension is lessened.
Yeah, that's amazing, actually. Yes. I mean, I think sisters and brothers is the ways in which they were referred to, because we're talking about like a confraternity and we're talking about the religious setup. But I think there are so many things to do in terms of what you were saying, what you were pointing out to, which is, you know, the literature and the ways in which miners were actually addressing women. So most of the times they're talking about wives, right? So because mining is a family business. So most of the times miners were actually going underground. Women were working above the ground. So their work was complementary in many ways. But I do think that like women's work in the mines and in many other sectors of the pre-industrial economy allows us to ask questions such as, what is work? Right. So because if work is, particularly in the mining industries, work is going underground, then what are women doing above the ground? So, and most of the times, as we know from like a lot of studies, a lot of scholarship, a lot of, you know, contributions in the textile manufacturing and in other kind of labor sectors, women's work was mostly unreported. It wasn't paid, it was flexible, it was precarious. So how do we actually recover their contribution? How do we actually think about their presence, despite the normative ideas around their presence? How do we actually recover their contribution in the mines? Because they were there, because you find them, you see them. Once you see them, you can't unsee them. So it's really striking when you find women just like transporting rocks and chopping woods and you know, prospecting for gold, for example.
That's hot.
I was about to say, wow, so much has changed. I'm really glad that women's work isn't undervalued anymore and isn't precarious and is super well paid. But wait, so Gabriele, to ask you your own question, how do you find it? You said, you know, once you see these women, what are the traces that you're identifying?
So this is a huge debate right now, particularly in this geography, labor history, economic history, about how to recover women's role in pre-industrial economy. And there are actually extremely good research done, particularly in the UK, in England, in Spain, for example, in France, all across Europe, that are kind of like using different type of methodologies. One of the most important methodologies being used recently is to look at the court cases, so like legal records. So when you actually interrogate your sources in a different way, you're going to find this kind of presence. For example, there's a dispute between miners. One most of the time throws a hammer at another one, and you know, everything, then there's like a brawl, and then people are talking, and they produce a lot of paperwork. So they really produce a lot of, you know, interrogations and reports and analysis and whatever. Sometimes you're lucky enough to actually find women being asked about, okay, what did you see? Okay, what were you doing while this was happening? And this is extremely important because women, most of the times, they actually intervene and they say, ah, I was, you know, chopping wood next to my house while this other stupid miner was actually throwing hammers at another guy. So this is the way, one of the ways in which you actually recover the work. In my personal opinion, I am actually trying to adopt this kind of methodology. But I think also that it's important to sort of bring this perspective from the history of science, because this normative framework, these ideas, this constant debate about women's role in fields such as medicine, not only the economy, but also natural philosophy in general, it's extremely important to understand women's presence in the minds also from the perspective of the history of science, because the history of science gives you a kind of like an overarching framework of the debates around women's blood, for example, debates around women's bodies in early modern Europe. And it also allows you to understand, for example, that these kind of labor practices were also very much entangled with scientific knowledge. So thinking about prospecting gold in riverbeds, that you have to have a certain knowledge to recognize what kind of ores were actually good for your precise tasks. You have to have some sort of like an environmental knowledge of what was happening around you. So there are actually a lot of things that I think might be sort of explored further when adopting this combined analysis between labor history and the history of science.
That's so good. Well, of course, I love the history of science discussion, but I think it's so interesting that you first talked about court cases, because lots of times that is where women's histories are found, especially I know quite a few people working on the history of abortion. And so often you only find out about these procedures or these women's stories when they make it to the courts. And that's just the problem of archives.
Thank you so much, Gabriella. This has been so interesting. I'm trying to avoid all the puns that are coming to my mind, like about delving into this history with you.
About this new period for us.
Oh my gosh.
It had to happen.
It did. So I guess as we wrap up, thank you so much for joining us and for being our very first guest. I think it's been a fantastic episode. I just wanted to ask, where can people find you on the internet? Where can they find your work?
Thank you, Emma. I have a Twitter account and a Google Scholar account and an academia page. And then you can find my work most likely in the academia page.
Yeah, that's great. Thank you so much. This was so interesting. We'll definitely have the image that we talked about in our show notes and on our website. And we'll definitely link to your work in our show notes and on our website as well. Big thank you from me and Emma. And to the listeners, I promise we're working on season 3 and that'll be coming soon-ish.
Thank you.